Good afternoon. This is Nevin Campanella welcoming you to the Saturday edition of Woodland Stars Radio. Here at Woodland Stars, we believe that every human on the planet has the power to use their thoughts to change events in the mundane world. This show is all about learning how to gain control of that creative process. Now, the Saturday edition of Woodland Stars Radio is primarily used for presentation of specific information. It could be motivational kinds of things, so on and so forth. In this particular series, I am presenting seminars on creating your own reality. And this is part two, which in itself has kind of a long history, which I'll get to in a minute. But first, I got to check on co-host. Wambui, are you there?
I'm here, and I'm ready.
Okay. Let's get started. Well, okay. As I said, part two has had a long history, mainly because it took me three attempts to really get a crystal clear part one, and which you will find on last Saturday's presentation. And before I even jump into a wrap-up of the last show, kind of a summary, I want to talk to you about the evidence for knowing that there is such a thing as creating your own reality by using your thought. We did conclude on the last seminar that I accept my self-awareness simply because I believe in it, and therefore I exist. I believe I exist. And I spent a lot of time talking about why I am not my brain. Now I want to jump into something here called the placebo. It's very important to understand that you really have to rule out that you are not your brain if you're going to do any creating of your own reality. Now, do we have evidence that you can actually create your own reality? In other words, you know, the hardcore stuff, something we can all see, something we can all measure, something we can all agree to and say, yeah, that sucker is there. There sure is. And it's called the placebo effect, folks. Now, that's usually a term used by pharmacology in their research. In simple terms, they're doing some research on a given pill. They want to know if the pill works or not. In statistics, you have to use what's called a double-blind study. The statistical people say if you really want to demonstrate if something works, you need a double-blind study. What does that mean? It means that neither the researchers nor the volunteers, victims, funny word, know who's getting what. Are they getting the real pill or a sugar pill? Now, interesting result. What happens is that in many, many studies, I'm not making this stuff up, folks. In many, many studies, what happens is there's actually a curative effect from the people who are taking a damn sugar pill. Now, for the past 200 years, this effect has been known as the placebo. That in itself is telling you you can create your own reality by thinking about it. These people thought about getting cured, being given a sugar pill, but to get cured. Now, I'm not saying that it's a large part of the research, although some researchers will say it is. It's not. From what I can see, it's a small percentage, but you know, you only need one. You only need one. And it makes it so. I remember a movie I saw once with Anthony Hopkins, in which he said, if one man can do it, another can. Same goes here, folks. If one person in the research group can do it, you can do it. Well, the term, like I said, is usually applied by medical science to the healing effect of inert medicines or ritualistic or faith-healing manipulations. By the way, that comes right out of my favorite encyclopedia, Wikipedia. And I love that part, ritualistic or faith-healing manipulations. I don't know what the word manipulations means and all that, but for some reason the people in Wikipedia felt they need to put that in. Now, how simple is all this definition of the placebo? Well, if you go to Wikipedia, you're going to find some interesting information about the placebo. And what I'm saying, when I say placebo, I want you to now convert in your own mind my ability to create my own reality by thinking about it. That's placebo. I'm going to quote this to you. Researchers at Columbia and Michigan University have shown that the brains of volunteers who believed that what they were taking was pain medication were shown to be spontaneously releasing opioids or natural pain relief. Is that amazing or what?
Also, Nevin, it works with children. We've seen that when little kids are told they're smart, they are smart. When they're told they're not smart, they're not smart.
That brings up an interesting little bit of research, Rambui, that was done in the educational system. They actually tested that, and a group of children on the first day of class, one group was approached by a teacher who was kind of curt and short and kind of, in a sense, didn't let them feel very good about their own ability. A second group of children were told that they were extremely brilliant. All children had been measured, tested, so on and so forth. All of them were all about the same. And the results, those that were told that they wouldn't do very well didn't do very well. Those that told that they were brilliant exceeded all possible expectations. That's a real study in education. And so Wambui is bringing up a good point. It happens. You'll see it with children, but you will also really see it with adults, too. Now, like I said, the effect has been known for years. Some researchers kind of go a little bit overboard, such as Harvard's Herbert Benson, who says that the placebo effect yields beneficial clinical results in 60 to 90% of diseases. That's a lot, folks. Now, my background is in science, and I've seen the placebo effect myself, but it's certainly not 60 to 90%. In most of the cases that I've seen it in, instead of using percentages, I'm going to use numbers. Let's take 100 people. About 2 people out of that 100 will demonstrate the ability to create their own reality by having taken a sugar pill. And remember, they don't know that they're taking a sugar pill. They believe they're taking some sort of curative pill. So, we know about the placebo effect, been around for years, studied for years. I mean, this thing has been well documented and demonstrated. It's been so documented that it astounds me that people aren't rushing to research it. Because that, in fact, is the observable part of creating your own reality. We can actually measure that. Now, you would think that something that has been studied so far and so deep would simply be presented as common knowledge, right? Wrong. It really amazes me what people are willing to swallow. And what are they willing to swallow? A lot of the garbage by Robert Todd Carroll. Well, who's Robert Todd Carroll? Where did I get that name from? From snakeoil.com. Skeptics.com, excuse me. Yeah, I got an axe to grind with old Todd. Todd is at best a yellow journalist. Go look it up in the dictionary if you don't know what yellow journalism is. But at skeptics.com, he's going to try to show you that there's no such thing as a placebo effect. He's full of crap. He's just plain full of crap. The problem is people out there will believe that. They'll put it in their head. If you rule out placebo, you have accepted you being your brain. It's that simple. How do you get around all this material? How do you know what's true and what isn't true? Well, I have no easy answer for that. I mean, you do have to, at some point, you do have to wake up. You have to understand that there is a sort of conspiracy out there that wants to keep you in your place, and they don't want you to know about creating your own reality. Now, am I being paranoid when I say a conspiracy? Do you know that if you type into Google placebo effect, at the very top of Google, the very first, guess what you get? Snakeoil.com, that's right. Oh, excuse me, skeptics.com. How much money is being paid and by whom to get skeptics.com at the very top of the list when you type in placebo effect? And there are people who want to say to me, oh, there's no such thing as a conspiracy. Well, they're full of shit. Plain and simple. There is a conspiracy out there, but it's not from our government. Our government people are too stupid to produce a conspiracy. It's produced by who actually runs the world, and that's corporations. And when it comes to placebo effect, who doesn't want you to know the truth? The drug companies and the American Medical Association. And I'm putting it in their ballpark. They are responsible for keeping you from knowing this information. So, I want to get on with my notes here, but I had to get this out about the placebo. It is extremely important that you understand it, because if you don't understand it, you're wasting your time listening to me. Okay, on with my seminar notes. Well, we do know, at least I know, that information that comes from my brain is not stored in my brain. Where is it stored? I don't know, but it ain't in my brain. You can't take brain tissue, put it under a microscope, and look at the first kiss I ever had. You ain't going to find it there, folks. It's just not going to happen. Now, if I'm not my brain, and I do exist because I believe it, and I know I can create my own reality because it's proven to me by all the placebos that take place constantly in research, what's my next step in trying to create my own reality? What kinds of areas do I need to take a look at to further my cause for wanting to expand on this concept of creating my own reality? Well, we get to a point where we have to start making some assumptions regarding the nature of the universe and what I am in it. There is a sense sometimes of confusion as to what we are, because we have people like skeptics.com throwing bullshit at us. Believe me, my wife is going to call me on my having used the term bullshit and crap and so on and so forth. That's okay. I need to make this point, and it really needs to be driven home. You have to make some assumptions about what you believe. There is no way to demonstrate or, quote, prove the nature of the universe being one thing or another. It is simply not possible. It's out of our league. We don't have the language to even describe it. So we make some assumptions. These are called our a priori assumptions. They're the very first. And it's kind of the term a priori is actually comes out of our legal system. An a priori judgment is based on a hypothesis or theory rather than an experiment, and it is derived by logic without observed facts. That's pretty much what the legal system says, and that's what I'm saying to you. You're going to have to pick an assumption about the nature of the universe. Well, we are definitely stuck because we can't test the cause of the universe, So we have to make the assumption. And because the assumption has no observed facts, it is a priori. Well, it's a tricky place to be for sure. I mean, you know, we sit around and we think we know all these things, but when it comes right down to it, we don't know a whole lot of anything, and a lot is based on belief. And that's what I'm about to dive into here, your belief system. That's what assumptions are. So what kind of assumptions are available? I'm saying you're going to make some assumptions about the nature of yourself and the universe. Well, what are the possibilities? Well, there are probably as many assumptions as there are opinions about the nature of the universe. However, after I've looked at it and searched through it, I can only come up with two. I can only come up with two possible a priori assumptions. Now, the very first one, number one, I am infinite. That is one possible assumption of my existence, that I am infinite. What does that mean? It would translate into no first cause. That's what that would mean. And the term infinite is a tricky, tricky term. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. But you could wind up stumbling over yourself with that term if you're not careful. But literally, the first a priori assumption is, quote, I am infinite. That's number one. That's one possible assumption I could accept, and that means there is no first cause. I always existed. I always will continue to exist. So what's the second? Well, the second is what most people are used to, and that is, quote, I am finite. It means that there was a beginning, some sort of beginning point. This is really, really a tricky area. And if you go back historically, you'll get to a person called St. Thomas Aquinas, who attempted to deal with this term. And believe me, it is a tricky term. He came up with a very unusual, very unusual conclusion. He concluded relative infinity. I'll get to that in a little while. Totally illogical. Makes absolutely no sense, but religious people would like to swallow that. So you're left with these two possibilities. Either you're infinite or either you're finite. Now, if you're finite, it suggests that there was a cause of you. You weren't always around. At one point, you did not exist. Your self-awareness was not there, and at some point, it came into being. Well, how did it come into being on that second assumption? That's called religion. That's called God. It's called that force that creates from nothing. So those are your two possibilities. You can either assume that you are infinite, you always were, you always will be, that there is no first cause for you, or you can assume that there is a first cause and there was a point somewhere in which you did not exist and you were, quote, created. So why is this so important, and is there any truth to either one of them? Well, it's very simple. One is just as valid as the other, since observable proof is not available. It's just not available. I'm not about to get on a radio and tell you to pick one over the other, simply because either one will work in terms of creating your own reality. That's right, and I'm going to get there in a minute. Either one will work, but you got to be careful with them. since they're both only assumptions, it serves little purpose to surround either one of them with a cloak of validity. And this is where I need to nail some of the New Age people. They like to develop what I call organized spirituality, which is as useless as organized religion. And they like to kind of use this type of reasoning of them being infinite and saying to other people, this is truth. You know, when we get to the definitions of infinity, you're going to find out that if something is infinite, then all truths are possible and valid, even if they contradict each other. That's a definition of infinity. We'll get there into a second. Why would you choose one over the other? I mean, is there some rationale for it? Well, for myself, the first assumption, that is, I am infinite, is certainly less traditional and a lot more difficult to understand because we're used to living in a world in which everything seems to have a beginning and an end. But the first assumption, I am infinite, removes any roadblocks emotionally about creating my own reality. If you choose a second assumption, you kind of have to pay homage on the side to the Creator. And some of the things that you might think about creating, you might also believe from your own training, fall only to the Creator. In other words, you can't touch it. What am I touching on here? Well, if you look very closely at the Bible, we're talking about the Garden of Eden, aren't we? And the search for knowledge. Well, the first assumption leaves you totally open, but it also leaves you totally responsible. The second assumption, you don't have so much responsibility for creating. But does that mean that in the second assumption, you are not allowed to create, you can't create? If you are a religious person under the second assumption, which I'm saying the assumption of you were created, does that mean that you can't create your own reality? Are you being told by the teachers of Christianity that that's not something you can do? Well, folks, for the Christian who might be listening, if you believe that you're not supposed to create or that you can't create, then you haven't read your Bible. That's right, because the master teacher Jesus states unequivocally, without question, in Luke 17:6, I'm going to quote it, and the Lord said, quote, if you had faith like a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. That was Jesus talking to his disciples. What is he telling his disciples? What is he telling future Christians who believe they were created by God? What is he telling them? He's telling them they most certainly can create their own reality. And the only reason that they don't is because they have so little faith.
Well, Nevin, he also said, the works that I do, ye also shall do. You also shall do even greater.
Yes. When Bowie brings up a magnificent point, you know, and even greater. That, you know, I'm totally amazed that people aren't walking around with their mouth hanging open when they read that. But it's kind of like the ministers just kind of go over it very quickly and then say, you better listen to me because I'm going to show you the way. The way is inside you. And the master teacher, Jesus, tells you that. But nobody seems to be listening. Maybe that's what he meant when he talked about having ears but not hearing. It's in the Bible. even if you accept only the second assumption, that you were created by God, Jesus is telling you, you have the, not only the power to create, but as Wayne Bowie brings up, even greater than. Greater than what? Greater? Well, he's talking about greater than the original cause. That is absolutely mind-blowing. Absolutely. Well, what happened to it? I mean, where did it go? Where did all this information go? How come Christians aren't running around preaching this? Bringing out the placebo effect, as they like to call it. Because the day that people start catching on that they are this powerful, then all the power mongers lose their power. That's the only reason people do not know this. It's the only reason why we continue to believe that we have to be cared for by pills, the American Medical Association, or whatever else they want to stick into you. Yeah. You've been handed a bill of goods because people in power want to keep their power. Well, who are those people? I use the word they a lot. They. Who the hell are they? This is simple. The definition of they, anybody who is in Washington, D.C., in our government, and anybody who is the head of organized religion. That's the they. Now, what's the difference between politics and religion? None. There's absolutely no difference. It was just a bunch of people that ganged up, got together and said, you know, the best way to capture people is give them an enemy. We'll split up into two camps. We'll be the religious guys, you be the political guys. And now they got you. And you fall for it. You fall for it every day. They don't want to give up their power. The religious authorities absolutely do not want to give up their power.
We have a caller.
Say that again.
We have a caller on line two. You're the only one who hears me. The audience can't hear me.
Oh, okay. Bring them on.
Now on line two.
Hello, I have a caller out there.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Fine. Who am I speaking to?
This is Mark. I'm calling from Albuquerque.
Mark from Albuquerque.
And, hi. I just touched on your program today, and I was listening, and it was very, very enlightening, and I hope people are listening. But, you know, you had the two choices. I only had a comment. You had the two choices up there. If you accept the first one, both are correct. Because if we are created by a creator, that's part of the infinite possibilities. So actually, if you get both with one, pretty much. And I'm not a new ager, so to speak. I think of it more as old wisdom. And the community spirit has nothing to do with that's all we're going to do. We each are individuals. We each find our own path to the truth, what we know is the truth, and we can't know all truth because, as you say, because of infinite possibilities, every truth is truth, but there are things that are illusion that you're speaking about now that, as far as the religions, it's illusion. It's illusion. They have the power, not you. Politicians, it's an illusion. They have the power, not you. But you each have your power. That's the whole point of the Christian's teaching, the Buddhist teaching. You are your power.
Yes. And the problem is that people don't believe it. And that's the purpose of this show, is to get them to understand that they do have that power. You're absolutely correct that people have this power, and you do not need to go outside of yourself. You don't need to go into organized religion or what I call organized spirituality.
Right.
The problem, Mark, is that we need more people such as you such as you to call into shows like this and shout it out loud. Wambui, she does it all the time in her shows that she does. We have to somehow get people to understand they've been sold a bill of goods. And all I'm trying to do is untangle that piece by piece.
And you're doing such a good job, and I commend you so much on how you do it. And it's shows like this that are getting the message out. I live it every day with every person I meet.
Well,
they feel it from
that's
me.
That's absolutely splendid, Mark. And I pass the message on. I thank you for calling us, and please continue to listen. Please continue to call in and get your friends, not only to call in, but...
May I say one thing, more thing?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, it comes down to a basic choice, and it's the free will that comes in. It's the choice between fear or love. Will you live in love or will you live in fear? What they're selling is fear.
Yes.
Those being... live in love, because then you're not being sold anything. You're accepting what is within you. And that's all. I thank you for the time, and God bless you both.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Mark.
He was saying, and what he's telling you, stop living in fear. Live in love. That's what Mark is telling us. Wambui,
yes.
Say something. Tell him about it.
Well, we first of all, on behalf of the people, or the devil's advocate, if you will, there is so much money spent and so much energy spent to keep us from knowing, as you said before, who we are, that the people don't know that they're not free, because so much energy and money is spent to make us believe that we are free, but we don't, but at the same time keeping us from knowing who we really are. So there's that big factor that they have all the money, the day you're talking about, and they are controlling the media. They control TV, newspapers, ads, everything. And so it's important for us to not know who we really are, because then we would realize that we don't need to buy all the things that they're trying to sell us.
Yeah. What amazes me, and again, I'm probably harping on Skeptics.com, but they've got enough money to actually get it at the top of the list in Google. And our own producer, Don Newsom, would love to get at the top of a list in Google. And all the efforts and all the listeners we have, and we find it difficult to do, how does Skeptics.com do it so easily? There's a lot of money flowing to keep people down, to keep them from knowing their true power. And you know, Wambui, if people were to ever wake up all at once, and some of the gurus tell me that this is going to happen, it's going to be a very bad hair day for those in authority. A very bad hair day. Well, I really enjoyed Mark's comments, and they were right on. They really were.
Yes, they were.
And I also
believe that, I know he talked about selling fear, and I truly believe that we are on a daily basis sold fear. I've talked about on my website and some of my articles about how at the airport you're constantly hearing the alert, you know, the alert level is orange, the alert level is orange, the alert level is orange. And you know what, even on the subway and the buses here in New York, there's this constant tape that plays, if you see something, say something, if you see something, say something. And so it's like, constantly, you want to kind of relax and enjoy, and constantly you're reminded, be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. And you're not even sure what you're afraid of. Which is
that's amazing, isn't it? You're not even sure what you're afraid of.
And I also believe, one of the things that I know when 9/11 happened, and that was a dreadful, terrible, terrible day. I don't make lightly of that at all.
Were you in New York at the time?
I was in New York. And there was, again, such amazing fear. And I'm not religious, but I believe in God. And there were so many people who are God-fearing people who are very much overly afraid. And I feel this way. Either you believe in God or you don't. And if you believe,
then you know God's got it. You got it. It's whatever is happening, it's God's got it. And so just step back and let God do the job. God knows how to do it. That's what I believe, that the God power in us, the God power, the essence, you may feel differently, but I just feel that either we do believe or we don't. And if you say you believe in God, then step back and let God take care of it.
And you make a good point, Wambu. You really do, and that's what I'm trying to tell people. Mm-hmm. Either assumption is fine. Either assumption is valid. But if you're going to pick one, do it 100%. If you're going to believe in God, then do exactly as Wambu said. Toss the power there. Let him get on with his job. If you're going to be the infinite existence, assumption number one, then start taking 100% responsibility for everything that occurs around you. Now, folks, either one of these assumptions is fine, but you've got to pick. You can't sit in between. You can't, you know, you can't say things like, well, gee, I'm really not sure, or I doubt, or I got a stomachache today, I don't want to think about it. Wrong. Pick. Choose. You know, stand up to the plate and be counted. The minute you do that, you will start creating your own reality, and those in authority will start running. They will. There's a few years ago, I used to see a kind of a bumper sticker, and it would say, no fear, N-O-F-E-A-R. And I thought about that, and I thought, no fear. Okay, so the person's saying they don't have any fear. But you know, the problem with the term no is it N-O if you say it, or is it K-N-O-W? Tricky, our language, very tricky. So when you say no fear, what am I saying, that there isn't any? Or am I saying you should know it and understand it? Our language structure seems skillfully constructed to make us confused, very confused. Maybe that's why people in other countries claim that the English language seems for them to be so difficult to understand. Let's get on with, where am I? I'm trying to look at my notes.
Well, before you go on, you know, we in this country, we spell relief, R-O-L-A-I-D-S. So it's easy to be confused.
Yes. Okay, so the actual process of creating your own reality, it really is very simple. You have to develop enough confidence, faith, to carry the message forward to fruition. You've got to have the faith of that mustard seed. But, here it comes, folks. You know, there's always a but. You need to first establish a sort of track record of positive experiences and self-discipline. Now, I would love to be able to say to you, all you have to do now up to this point is reach the same conclusions I have, and you can now create anything. Well, unfortunately, I'm telling you, you've got to establish a track record. You have to start small. This comes about by first understanding who you are and your awesome position within the framework of creation. And too often, we were conditioned to believe that we were all doomed to a life of misery. Well, we are not doomed to a life of misery, and you are worthy of anything you want. Now, let's talk about the word want. Neil Donald Walsh brings this word up in his book, Conversations with God. I believe it was in the first volume. You got to be really careful about how you state the reality that you're seeking. If you use the word want, the universe is going to give you exactly that, a wanting. In other words, never achieving. So, and I know this is difficult. It's difficult to get out of our language. It's difficult to get out of our heads. I want this, I want that. And we keep thinking that what we're doing is making a positive statement. But what we're saying is, I want, which means to the universe, oh, they really are saying they like the idea of the anguish of constantly wanting and not succeeding. That's how the universe will interpret it, at least according to Donald Walsh in his book. I've heard that the
universe has no sense of humor and takes literally everything that you say.
Yes, it does. It is very literal, and it is very... But the universe, Wambui, from my point of view, is not at all active. It is reactive.
Mm-hmm.
It is reactive to every thought out of your head, and it takes it at a literal level. So when you say you want something, you will continue to have that wanting because that's what you did. That's what you put out. From Walsh's viewpoint, the present creation, in Walsh's viewpoint, is established by and within God so that sentience can exist which does not directly remember its true nature as God. Yes, I did read that, folks. I read that right out of my notes because I knew I'd really screw that up if I tried to paraphrase it. And what did I say? What I'm saying is that there was that God, according to Neil Donald Walsh, splintered, and although splintered, lost its memory so that it could experience the journey back, or literally so that it could be entertained. And that's what Walsh concludes in his own book, that God is saying to Neil Donald Walsh, creation is all about entertainment. Think about it for a moment. If you're at the first assumption, entertainment makes sense. That is, if I am God, if I am infinite, entertainment makes a lot of sense, and nothing else needs to be said. If you're at the second assumption, entertainment doesn't sound so good, but what people will put in its place is lessons. I don't care. Use either one in terms of purpose, whether it's lesson or entertainment. For me, it's entertainment. For Wambui, it may be a lesson. It doesn't matter. Pick. But believe it. Believe it at the 100% level. From Walsh's book, he's literally saying that what God said to him, and this is from Neil Donald Walsh, God said to him that creation itself is essentially a game entered into by agreement. And the game is that you're not going to remember what you are, and you're going to have all these fantastic journeys, not so that life has meaning, but so that it has entertainment. And for the person in assumption number two, not because that it's entertainment, but because that it has meaning. For myself, existence has no meaning other than the entertainment value. There are people out there in assumption number two who say, wait a minute, that's not true for everybody. And it's not, like I said before. But either assumption is just fine. Just pick one. So now you're armed with picking one of these two assumptions. Either it's the first, you are infinite, or the second, that you are finite. Now we get to a point where we have to start gaining an understanding of the term infinity itself. If you pick the first assumption, that you are infinite, the next step would be to develop a definition of infinite that you can use to assess the consistency of your conclusions regarding the nature of creation. You need a definition of it. If you choose the second assumption, it is then the authorities of religion who establish the conclusions regarding the nature of creation and the concept of infinity. Infinity becomes an extremely important term when we talk about creating your own reality. You really got to get this one down, and this one ain't easy. I mean, it really isn't. I'm going to read something that I read from a newspaper out of the Far East. I don't know whether it was Pakistan or India. Let me just quote this to you. Spirituality allows us to move out of that confusing, never-ending physical infinity. The physical infinity is like getting into a room full of mirrors. It is just a case of illusion that sees millions of you through the mirror effect. But once you turn the light off, do realize that it is just you in the room. Spirituality allows you to get over that realm of confusing physical reality. You know, there's a lot packed into that little paragraph, and that's what we're trying to get past. We're trying to get past the illusion and confusion of what we think of as physical reality, and that's why we need to get into this concept of infinity. All right, let's get down to it. Where does the word come from? Who looked at the concept of infinity? Well, actually, it was the ancient Greeks that took a look at it, and they ran like hell. They were literally frightened by the concept. Because it meant that there was, to them, it meant there was no control. And they actually called it apreon, meaning something out of control. That was their concept of infinity. So the ancient Greeks, while they tried to deal with the term, they really had a tough time with it. And because the concept to them was so bizarre, and it was contrary to every human intuition, and that's what I was saying before, in the world we live in, everything seems to have a beginning and an end, so your intuition is to say, well, everything is finite. Well, the Greeks started playing with this concept of something not being finite, and boy, that scared the hell out of them. It really did confound the ancient philosophers and the mathematicians to such a point, and I know this is going to be hard to believe, it confounded them to such a point, it actually caused some of them to lose their sanity. And if you look at it historically from the book by Amir Azel, it actually, in one case, produced a murder. That's right, back to the old Greeks, there was actually a murder over this. They took their philosophy very seriously. So when it comes down to the term infinity and who was looking at it, well, it's got a heck of a history. Now, Aristotle suggested that infinity existed simply because time appeared to have no beginning or end. But infinity cannot exist in the world we perceive because that would mean it had boundaries, which by definition, it has no boundaries. It's boundless. That's the paradox. I'm using the word infinity. I'm saying to you it is definable. At the same time, I'm saying to you, the second I try to define it, I place a boundary around it, making it not infinite. That is the paradox of the problem. That's what the ancient Greeks ran into. They knew, at that level, that they couldn't even deal with the term, because they constantly got bound up in the paradox. Wow. How do you deal with that? Well, Aristotle tried to get around it, and some people believe that he did. I'm not convinced, but Aristotle came up with the following example. He's talking about the Olympic Games. He says, the Olympic Games exist, and we know that it does. It's impossible to deny this. Everybody says the Olympic Game exists. Now, if someone who was not Greek, wasn't from the Greek Isle, never heard of the Olympic Games, if they were to ask, show me this Olympic Game, you couldn't do it. Because at the moment, it doesn't exist in reality. It only has a potential of existing. So Aristotle is saying that infinity is a state of potential. Does that mean it's not a state of reality? I'm not sure that I agree with Aristotle that it is a state of potential. If I had the opportunity, I would argue that it is a state of probable as opposed to potential. Now, and I've got my own analogy that I can give you that would be similar to Aristotle's, and that is your dream. We can report a dream, but we can never prove that it actually existed in the real world. Now, that's a little bit like infinity. The dream is potential, but has no defined boundaries that can be demonstrated outside of the self. This concept of infinity, I know, is confusing, but you have to deal with it. Sharpen up, folks. Be smart. You can do this. Don't just put it off and say, oh, that's too hard, or that's just for philosophers. Crap. You can handle this. I don't know how many times in classrooms when I was teaching statistics, you know, the students would say, you know, I can't do math. Well, as soon as they said it, obviously they're not going to be able to. You can handle this concept of infinity. What I'm expecting you to do is to wrap yourself around it and say, I'm not really sure what Nevin is saying, but I have an intuitive feeling about it. And, folks, that's good enough for me that you have an intuition about the concept of infinity. It's, believe me, it's a big term.
Well, the concept of infinity for me is like made everything really easy. It made me understand that life is really simple because it's just infinity. To me, my definition is just being. What is, it is. And it always will be, like you said. So it just makes it simple because part of what we fear the most is death. And as far as I'm concerned, my body, I've told my children to this, my body may give out one day, but I can never die. So I have no fear of death, and once you have no fear of death, you don't have a fear of life anymore.
Oh, beautiful. The fear exists sometimes because we think or that we are approaching an ending of our own self-awareness, mm-hmm. and what Wambui is telling you is your self-awareness is going to exceed all expectations, including the expectation of the skeptic, who I hope at some point in time, 1,000 centuries from now, to meet Robert Todd Carroll on the other side and ask him how he feels about things now. Well, you know, it was from the ancient Greeks that we get the analogy of crossing a room, and that is it actually comes from the Greek Zeno, Z-E-N-O. And if you can, according to Zeno, you can actually never leave a room. Because if you try to walk out of a room half the distance each time you take a step, you have to constantly continue taking half and half and half because numbers don't end. So you could never leave the room. You've all heard this one. If each step you take measures half the size of the previous one, then even if you should take infinitely many steps, the total distance traveled measures twice your first distance. You can never leave the room. That's infinity. That's a concept of it. You know, before I brought up that little paragraph I read from the Far East Times or whatever it was about mirrors. There's kind of a neat little trick you can do, folks. If you want a visual display of infinity, just put two large mirrors together facing each other and stand in between them. That shows you as infinite. It's actually a very good visual display because there is no end to that reflection. I mean, that reflection continues without end. It really does. Well, the Greeks really got twisted up with the concept. I mean, they really had a really bad time with it. Now, for the longest time, people didn't want to deal with it. The sciences didn't want to deal with it. It was just too tough a concept. It was George Cantor, a mathematician, and I believe he was kind of like around the late 1800s, early 1900s. George Cantor is sort of the creator of set theory. Now, I'm not going to get involved in mathematics here with you, but it was through George Cantor's work with set theory, which really kind of established what's called mathematical infinity. Literally, he proved that the set of real numbers is more numerous than the set of natural numbers. And a real number can be described as, I don't know, numbers that are given an infinite decimal representation. That's a real number. Well, he demonstrated that the set of real numbers is more numerous than the set of natural numbers. Natural numbers are integers, literally. Meaning that infinity mathematically could exist. But it wasn't very easy for him. He went through hell, and as a matter of fact, old George Cantor, they claimed he was insane. No, he had a condition called bipolar, and was taken over by mood swings, terrible mood swings. But he was a hell of a mathematician. You know, folks, we are at that end of the hour. My producer said go right up to the end, so I did. I have to say goodnight to you all. I will continue next week on with infinity and into dreams. We love you all. Good night, Wambui.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
And thank you so much for listening.